Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome back to the Indie Football Podcast. I'm your host, Vidushin Hantaraja, and I'm joined by Chief Football Writer of The Independent, Miguel Delaney, and Northern Football Correspondent, Mark Critchley. Now, the weirdest European football season in history is back underway, with the Champions League and Europa League competitions returning this week after their coronavirus-enforced hiatus. Manchester United are already safely through to the next knockout round after seeing off the mighty LASK on Wednesday evening, with Wolves, Rangers, Manchester City and Chelsea all hoping to follow them over the coming days. Now, we'll start with the top-tier competition in the Champions League. Miguel, I'm going to start with you as a top-tier man as well. And before we jump onto the runners and riders and the contenders for the Champions League, can you just walk us through what it's all going to look like? You've written about the problems of not only the Lisbon and German bubbles, but also these remaining last 16 ties with testing, various protocols to go through, and also just how it was going to look from the very beginning. It just doesn't strike me as a particularly simple exercise, all told.
Well, to be fair, I think at this point, the Lisbon and German mini World Cups, which is effectively what they are, I think they're relatively easy to, and I'm stressing the word relatively there, given the situation we're in. I think they're relatively easy to pull off because, you know, obviously these are, in most cases, involved major clubs with massive money who can afford all this. And UEFA, of course, are a massively well-funded organization. And, you know, it's much more controllable. Now, I suppose that shouldn't be taken for granted, given the problems that it seems pretty much all the US sports have had. But I suppose it's not the only difference in the USA at the moment as regards that. But yeah, I do think that's easier to execute. I think what's much more relevant to the future of European football is these knockout ties over the next few days, the way the second legs will go. Because, you know, they're involving what, to be honest, let's be fair, what looked impossible only a few months ago, which was cross-border international travel for sport, and given all the variables and challenges that poses. And on Wednesday was or Tuesday, UEFA released a whole load of new directives to try and kind of encounter this, including stuff like if the country of one of the clubs suddenly passes some sort of legislation that blocks a team entering at a time after it's been agreed between the two, the host club can be thrown out of the competition. Now, I suppose in most cases that'll be overcome because as with Madrid in Manchester this weekend, elite sports teams are given special dispensation by the governments involved. Even though, of course, if you come back from Spain now, you face a 14-day quarantine, which won't apply to Madrid. But yeah, so I think this going through the next few days going fairly hassle-free is going to be pretty important to the future of European football. Although, if they plan full Europa League and Champions League in the future, they can't just do these mini tournaments. It's going to involve an awful lot of ties with an awful lot of smaller nations that don't have this money available. And I suppose that's maybe when it'll get fairly interesting or fairly indicative and why the blueprint from these games is so important. When you have essentially poor clubs trying to do the same thing in 2 months' time.
Just because you've mentioned it there, we might as well go into it in a bit of detail. Is that to say then that they, with regards to UEFA and the Champions League and Europa next season, there is still a belief that they could have it as close to how it was before rather than this kind of, you know, throw them into a hub and thrash it out?
The last I saw, now I might need updating on this, to be honest. I think they're gonna have one-legged group stages, possibly. I might need to check that, actually, to be honest. is this professional if I do this now?
Well, while you do that, we'll come back to you because, Critch, you're going to be covering Manchester City tomorrow night. They play Real Madrid, leading 2-1. Those two away goals all the more important. What are the noises at City? Are they particularly confident of holding on to this league and toppling a big giant so soon?
Okay, well, let me just try and filibuster for Miguel here while he sorts that out.
Sorry, I haven't.
Go on.
It is going to be a regular season next year, yeah? They're going to ban full travel.
That's reassuring to know. And on City, I think, given how the season's gone at the Etihad this year, I don't know if you would say they would be totally confident, but the lay of the land tomorrow night is that Madrid need to score two goals in order to have any chance of progression. Now, you'd say, given City's problems defensively this past season, that isn't impossible whatsoever. And especially given how Madrid have certainly improved since that first leg at the Bernabeu in late February, they look a different team now under Zidane, and they're the Liga champions as well. But I think from City's point of view, I mean, that performance at the Bernabeu back in February was probably their best of the season, certainly the most accomplished. And it felt actually like their first real defining night in the Champions League and in European football since the Sheikh Mansour project began. And that's even including the semi-final in 2016 when they went to the Bernabeu and lost. There are a few concerns for them, I suppose. There's no Sergio Aguero, and quite how Guardiola is going to square that circle will be interesting to know, because he could either play Gabriel Jesus up front, who was a player who was finding a bit of form towards the end of the season, but there's definitely questions there over just how many chances he seems to miss. Basically, he's not the most clinical of strikers, even though he gets into very good positions a lot of the time. I think there's a chance that Guardiola might actually do what he did at the Bernabeu and what he's done in quite a lot of games against top sides, where he plays somebody in a more of a kind of false nine role in a more of a fluid front line. You might see Bernardo Silva, maybe even Kevin De Bruyne up in that position. Maybe Jesus coming off the left. He was very effective there, I thought, when he was doing that late on against Madrid. Sterling was very good in that game as well, so we'll probably see a combination of those. And they've got Benjamin Mendy suspended as well, which isn't, you wouldn't say, is the biggest problem, but then left back has just been such a huge issue for them for so long. They're either going to have to put Alexander Zinchenko or João Cancelo on the wrong right-footed player on the left-hand side, which isn't ideal either. So it'd be interesting to see how Guardiola gets around those, but we're still talking about a side that's got a lot of weaknesses, as we've seen this season. But I think overall, given the advantage that they hold, given that they've got two away goals, I think you would favour them to go through, definitely.
Migs, you were just furnishing us with some fancy Real Madrid-related Zidane facts ahead of this second leg. They're obviously, as Critch touched on, they're a different team to where they were, well, certainly in a different place to where they were during the first leg, rather. How do you see this going? Do you reckon they can pull off a turnaround?
I think City will go through, but it'll be much more challenging than I would have thought after the first leg, which is now almost 6 months ago, which is insane. But I think, as Critch alluded to there, Madrid have gone through more transformation in that period than you would even expect over 6 months. First of all, they're now champions. So that's a massive psychological change, especially for players like, although Sergio Ramos won't be playing in this game, but like as I pretty much led my intro here on this piece in Real Madrid, he's someone that basically loves to be able to call himself a champion. It's one of those things that does change the mindset of elite sportsmen. They've also transformed physically in that they're a much better place now than they were in February. Like that game in February, the 2-1 defeat to City, was one of four losses in seven that Madrid had at that time. And they only won two games. So they were really uncertain. Now, since then, I think, as well, I mean, as regards the mental point as well, I think Zidane has been really key. And there's obviously been big questions about Zidane's ideology of a manager and all the rest of it. But I think at this point, it's difficult to dispute that he's the perfect personality for this Madrid squad. And I think apparently that particularly came across in lockdown. I mean, you basically had, I suppose, a lot of young men as anxious as the rest of us about the situation. And Zidane was meant to be really impressive. And that kind of just calm focus he has, that almost kind of unflappability, was said to be really big in lockdown for players. And that then obviously transmitted itself into their return, where they won 10 games in a row. But also I think they used lockdown to get physically very, very sharp. I mean, a lot of people in football praise Madrid as having the best physical department in the game. Zidane actually, he lost faith in their previous fitness or conditioning guy, Antonio Pintus, last summer, and brought in Gregory Dupont, who worked with the French squad at the 2018 World Cup. He's known as a McGregor among the Madrid squad for his kind of devotion to fitness and trying out loads of different techniques. And that work became really apparent once they were back from. And it's one of those things, I suppose, that they can. Clubs can get an edge in a situation like lockdown when they couldn't train together. So that obviously helped. And it all just added up to Madrid just looking. They were different. They're different in almost every aspect of February, mentally, physically, and in terms of form. In saying that, this is a different situation than Zidane has actually ever faced. In 9 previous Champions League ties, two-legged ties. Obviously, we all know that he's never lost a two-legged tie, but he's also only been behind once going into the second leg, and that was in his second tie against Wolfsburg in 2015-16. They lost 2-0 away, Madrid, and then, of course, beat Wolfsburg 3-0 in one of those utterly predictable games. 3-0 at the Bernabeu, Ronaldo scoring, all the rest of it. As I did dismiss some fodder, but this obviously is a very different proposition, and it's one that Zidane. It's really a challenge that Zidane hasn't faced as a manager before, and he pretty much has to outthink Guardiola, which I think is a pretty big ask.
And maybe this is putting too cute a point on it, but do you think the someone like Dupont can have a say? Obviously, they'll need to get through this tie first, but do you think someone like Dupont can have a more pronounced say in how Real Madrid do, given that they're about to enter into a, as you said, a World Cup style competition, having come from the national team, having from national football rather, with France and obviously a World Cup?
Well, that's the thing, yeah. And so both Deschamps and a lot of the French backroom staff particularly praised Dupont for France's conditioning in that World Cup. And if you remember by the final, now I suppose part of this was due to the fact that Croatia were always going to be more stretched because they didn't have as much quality as France. But by the second half of that final, Croatia were absolutely on their legs, whereas France kind of just looked the same. That's obviously a testament to the work of Dupont as well. And again, that could be key if you're trying to design a fitness program so you peak over a 2-week mini World Cup, which is what the next 2 weeks will be. But of course, they have to get there first.
Just, Chris, before we move on to Chelsea, Miggs has written about Kevin De Bruyne today. Obviously, an incredible player and certainly someone that we'll talk about as being one of the best players of this Premier League generation. But do you think his wider, quote unquote, legacy relies on having a big say in this, and I suppose the back end of the Champions League and emerging with it as a City player with the winner's medal himself?
Yeah, well, I've actually written about this myself in the past as well. I think when we did our series on the 100 greatest players of the 21st century back in October, and I did a piece on De Bruyne, and just pointing out really that, because that was when he just made that start to the season where I think he'd racked up maybe even nearly half of the assists that he actually finished with, and he was looking like he was going to set an unprecedented record, and he equaled Thierry Henry's in the end, just fell short of breaking it. But I pointed out then that I think he was 28. He's now 29. He's turned 29 this summer. He's getting to that age now where these next couple of years, whether it's this season, whether it's next season, you're looking for him to, I think we had him about 60th in that list or something like that. And if you're looking to really place him into the top 20 or 10 or whatever, which is where he probably deserves to be based on his natural ability, he does need to probably add those kind of honours to his record, if you like. And I remember writing at the time that this was going to be a crucial kind of 2 or 3 year period, because you had, yes, the Champions League this season. You probably have the Champions League next season as well, but that's likely to be Guardiola's last unless anything changes, and there's no real indication yet whether it will. Of course, at the time, there was the prospect of the Champions League ban. That's not a problem anymore. And the sense was that De Bruyne was always going to stay at City certainly last few months, he was going to stay whatever the result was. But and then, you know, there was the Euros that were supposed to be this summer, now next summer, and then you'll have the World Cup. So it does feel like there's a kind of two or three period here where, you know, he's ultimately, this is where his legacy is going to be defined. I think personally that, you know, having watched him regularly week in, week out, he is the most talented footballer that I've ever seen live in the flesh. It's as simple as that. He is the best player in the Premier League by some distance, has been for years now, even when he's had various spells, difficulties with injuries. And he just needs, perhaps, I'm always a bit reluctant to say that players need medals or whatever to prove it, because, you know, you can see with your own eyes how good they are. And I think they should be almost judged on their ability. If we're talking on an individual basis, they should be judged on their own ability rather than anything else, because it's a team sport and they don't necessarily control whether Manchester City, they don't alone control whether Manchester City or whoever they play for wins the Champions League. But at the same time, if he wants to be considered in those, you know, in that, on that rarefied level, along with, like, you know, Neymar, Messi, Ronaldo, et cetera, Xavi, Iniesta, then he probably does need to add a few more continental and international medals to his collection.
I did a piece on this yesterday, specifically on De Bruyne in that regard. And I think you're right. I mean, first of all, it's absolutely amazing with City that they've had one semi-final. Like, De Bruyne at the age of 29 has played in one Champions League semi-final, and the same applies obviously to Sergio Aguero, David Silva, and all basically the stars of this era. And that's actually quite rare in modern football, because basically all the big clubs are in the Champions League now so often. They're almost guaranteed a decade there, and the nature of it means all the stars are going to be in the competition as well. So it's basically increasingly difficult to not have a few defining performances in the competition. In fact, in the last decade, the only, like, world stars that probably haven't got that are, as well as always, Manchester City stars, maybe Hazard, who they face, Ibrahimovic, and maybe Robin van Persie. And of course, as Critch alluded to there, some of that is circumstantial. City have obviously had their own kind of, like, long nights of the soul in the Champions League and this kind of adjustment with it. And there has been cases where De Bruyne has been absolutely brilliant. I think a key example of that his last season's win over Spurs, when he had a hat-trick of assists. Two of the assists were absolutely brilliant. But, of course, they didn't get through because of VAR, because of millimetres, because of teammates missing chances, something that's become a key for him this season. And I suppose the romanticised counter-argument is that if you're going to be great, you impose your will even in those situations. And that's partially true, but it's not that simple. I mean, because both Messi and Ronaldo, for all we're going to talk about their greatness, they've had situations where in the Champions League, no matter how they've played, they've just succumbed. Like, they, you know, the events have gone out of their control. And I suppose the key here isn't imposing your will in impossible situations. It's maybe more perseverance. And that's what De Bruyne has. And I think he's aware of all this. But I actually do agree with Chris. I think while you should judge a player on his ability alone, when it comes right down to it, when we're really separating the best, it also comes down to the application of that ability at the top level. And you do need, I mean, ultimately, you know more about a player and you can tell more if that ability is tested at the absolute top level. And that has only been the case in a few examples with De Bruyne, maybe only the 2018 World Cup. So it would certainly be nice to see the team go with him further, see him drag the team further. And we get a real assessment of it. And I mean, even I was thinking about this in relation to one of his Belgian teammates the other day. I mean, Vertonghen, we all know what a good defender he was at absolute peak. And yet he's leaving Spurs and may well retire with literally nothing to show for his career outside a few individual honours. Like, that's mad for a player of his talent to do that. And whilst De Bruyne obviously has a few league titles and domestic cups now, given his talent, he should really have... He should have a Champions League. But of course, I think he's fully aware of this. And I expect him to be very good on Friday.
Well, City aren't the only team left in the Champions League. We do have Chelsea, of course, but they are 3-0 down to Bayern after that first leg home defeat. I was actually at that game and I was due to head to Munich for that second leg, which seemed a foregone conclusion until, well, I suppose that Friday beforehand when everything got called to a halt. Miggs, you were there at the FA Cup on Saturday. obviously they lost to Arsenal, which was a bitter blow for Frank Lampard and his quote-unquote project, and a boost for Arteta's quote-unquote project. But what did you make of them then? And I suppose, what can they get out of this game against Bayern Munich?
Road testing a few young players. I don't want to say there's absolutely no chance Chelsea going through, but there's no chance.
But I had to ask, you know, we had to mention them.
I mean, even beyond the fact that 3-0 down, another little interesting stat here. Up until last season, there'd only been 6 occasions in the history of European football, or the history of the European Cup and Champions League, so over 60 years, where a team had gone through having lost the first leg at home. So like Inter Bayern in 2011 was the most recent example. Until last season, when it happened 3 times. United did it to PSG, Spurs did it to Ajax, and Ajax did it to Real Madrid. But none of them were 3-0 down. So even allowing for the recent insanity of the Champions League and the oddness of this current situation, it's not going to happen, is it?
But with regards to, I suppose, the FA Cup, I know it feels like it was ages ago, but just on that, were you surprised at kind of how they fared? I think after that first goal, a lot of us were thinking, right, they're just going to, you know, a Chelsea of old would have rammed this home. But yeah, that obviously wasn't the case.
I think they were a bit knackered. I think the bit of football, a bit of the situation began to apply itself, just how much football they played in the last few weeks. That could be seen in the injuries. Lampard alluded to that after the game. And also, I think Lampard deserves some criticism himself here. I mean, to be fair, everything that could have gone wrong for them on the day did go wrong for them, including decisions going against them. But it is remarkable that 2 years into his managerial career now, and Lampard is suffering the same mistakes, he's suffering from the same problems than he did in his first day as Derby manager, which is a team that's almost hopelessly incapable of defending against breaks.
Yeah, yeah. Critch, before we end this section, obviously, I mentioned to Bayern Munich, who are 3-0 up in this tie. Assuming they do go through, which I think we all agree they will, probably one of the favourites to win it. Obviously, they've sewed up the Bundesliga, it seems like an age ago, so they've had a bit of time to themselves to kind of prep up. But yeah, are they a standout to live the Champions League at the end of all this?
I think you'd rank them alongside City. I think it's interesting that I was feeling before. At the time of the first legs back in February, which, like Miguel said, was 6 months ago now, so basically a different world, it did feel like they were being underrated slightly compared to perhaps City, PSG. And then we saw the performance at Stamford Bridge. You know, people woke up to this, the talent that kind of Alphonso Davies is and other players, and I think they've won every game that they played in the Bundesliga since restart. And now it does feel like they're being slightly overrated, perhaps. And I say that only really because the way the draw panned out. Because if you look at the draw, you look at the bracket for the rest of the tournament, there is definitely a good side to be on and a bad side to be on. And Bayern, say, are probably on the bad side. Because I think I'm right in saying that the quarterfinal will probably be Barcelona and Napoli now. Barcelona are in no way the team that they once were, and you'd expect them to get through that, but they do have City on their side of the draw. They do have Juventus, who we have questions about, but they're on that side of the draw as well. If they'd fallen on the other side, you'd fancy them against basically anyone there. But, you know, a potential semi-final against City, I'm not sure whether they come through that. And so, you know, that would almost be the final before the final if it gets to that. So we'll see. But yeah, I think I rank them probably second favourites behind City, but again, though their chances have been affected by just how the draw has panned out.
Cool. Well, we're going to take a super short break, and we'll see you in a bit.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome back to the Indie Football Podcast, where we were discussing the return of European football, and still are, actually. We've gone through the Champions League, now on to the Europa. As we mentioned earlier, Manchester United are through to the quarterfinals after seeing off LASK without too much trouble in the last 16. Critch, you were at Old Trafford last night. How was it?
It was dull. There wasn't a lot riding on it, let's be totally honest. The first half particularly was pretty turgid stuff. But look, like I said, not a lot riding on it. United had already done the job back in March.
5-0 in the first leg, sorry, I should have said.
Yeah, 5-0 in the first leg, 2-1 last night, 7-1 on aggregate. And also Solskjaer, he named basically the same team that played in the 5-0. And I guess you'd say that your main takeaway from it was that for all the talk about how well they've played over the last 6 months, there's still not really that level of squad depth there that you'd want if they're going to not only really live up to this talk about a title challenge potentially next season, but also just the fact that they're going to be playing in the Champions League next year. And so that's probably going to mean they're going to need to play a first choice 11 every 3 days, twice a week. I'm determined to try and keep this a Jadon Sancho free podcast today, but you know, perhaps it showed that they need to go into this market this summer. And even though it's going to be very different, there's going to be certain limitations, and they are conscious of how much money they're going to spend. I think the need for some reinforcements was there, and that was on show last night.
Migs, you've been it says in the script you've been as critical as anyone on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Not without reason, it should be said. Does he deserve some credit to where they are right now, or is it just Bruno Fernandes and flogging the same 11 players over and over and over again?
I think it's still a little hard to say given how odd the season has been. And I think in some ways the break actually played into United because it meant they were, obviously whatever Solskjaer does, and he's talked about this in internal meetings, his idea of football is based on being able to run at absolutely full pelt. So that meant they were very good when they first came back, with that naturally trailing off. And it is really over, and this has been a story of his time so far. So it is really over the longer term and a full season where we're going to get a full picture. And I don't think we have a full picture yet. I still have a lot of doubts, but you have to give him some credit as well. And I think what is important here is that maybe a little bit like Zidane in that sense, in that he has a personality. Now, there's still questions over other aspects of the management, but he has a personality which is very well suited to this job. And one thing that has to be said, actually, all the players really like him and really like playing for him. Now, one who didn't was Lukaku, but that was because basically Solskjaer was trying to shun them out. So it could actually be interesting how that plays out in the Europa League if they come up against each other, and also with the Sanchez dynamic and all that. But the players like playing for him. They do seem to respond well to him. So I think he does deserve credit for that, I have to say.
How important do you think then this, you know, lifting the Europa League will be? Obviously, United have secured Champions League football, but it's still, you know, do you think it's still something that, I suppose, above all else, will kind of prove to himself that he is the man to take the club forward?
Yeah, I think it'll mean more than, say, when they won the Europa League in 2017. Bizarre, because obviously that came, first of all, it was the emotional aspect because it came just 2 days after the Manchester bombing. So there was something bigger about that win. And also, of course, it meant that they completed the set of European trophies. But in terms of the trajectory of the club and the manager, winning it this year will mean more in this sense, because Solskjaer obviously doesn't have a major trophy. A lot of these players don't have major trophies. So it's kind of one of those, a little bit like Arsenal at the weekend, it's one of those kind of, you know, psychological landmarks in the trajectory of the team that indicates they're going in the right direction, and can often kind of cause them to go up a level. So from that perspective, at the least, I'd say it could be bigger than 2017.
Chris, you've watched a lot of Manchester United this season. Do you think they're right to be favourites for this?
It's difficult to say. I think that you look at some of the other teams in the competition. You know, Inter came within 1 point of the Serie A title, and we can debate about the standard of play in Serie A versus the Premier League, but they got about 20 points more than United. They were an actual title contender rather than an also-ran, not even in the race in United's case. So you probably look, and even though they kind of resemble a team that was like built out of Football Manager 2007 with like, you know, Victor Moses and Alexis Sanchez and, you know, all these other kind of 30-odd-year-olds that Antonio Conte likes to sign, I think that they would definitely, you've definitely picked them out as the biggest threat. The thing is with them is that they're on the other side of the draw. And again, like the Champions League, there's almost a good and a bad side of the draw. Beyond Inter, probably on the good one. United, probably on the bad one, you'd say. Given that, I think I'm right in saying, let me just double check, but I think I'm right in saying that if they got through against Copenhagen on Monday night, there's potential for any one of Roma, who ended the season very well in Italy. They got they're playing Seville. Or they could play Wolves, or they could play Olympiacos, who I think went unbeaten in Greece. So don't quote me on that, though, maybe. But yeah, like especially Roma, Seville, Wolves, even though Wolves ended the season quite poorly, you'd say any potential semi-final is going to be pretty difficult. So I think I'd probably put United about second favourites. I think that's probably a fair assessment, especially when you considered that not as much is riding on it now. And it definitely, you know, Solskjaer is kind of paying a bit of lip service to the competition and saying, no, it's a trophy and we want to win it, and talking about how big a first trophy would be. And I agree with what Miguel just said there about on that. But it doesn't have the same onus riding on it as it would have done if they'd finished fifth. That's just the case. That's just a fact. And even though I think he's going to probably revert to that first choice 11 that we saw a lot of during the restart, I still think... it doesn't carry as much weight as it otherwise would have done, and you perhaps think that maybe there'll be a little bit of slack there, and maybe they won't just get it over the line, but we'll see.
Miggs, what do you reckon of Wolves? Critch mentioned them just there. They obviously had an outstanding season domestically, and fell away at the from Project Restart, I suppose. But they kind of have everything in place. They've got a shrewd manager. They've got some exceptional players. Perhaps. An outside bet for the Europa League, especially given the format it's going to be played in?
Well, it's kind of ironic, because if this was a normal season, you would have expected Wolves to be on their feet, to be honest, because they kind of extend the, especially going into March, April, you know, with the slog of the Europa League. Whereas the coronavirus crisis might have, in football terms, played into their hands, because A, it suddenly gave them this big long break. B, it then meant for a club that isn't used to having to spread priorities like that, it meant they had the league and then the European competition split, so they could concentrate on one and the other. And yet what's actually happened is, as Chris said there, they kind of died down in the league a little bit. And I was at their last game against Chelsea, and they're pretty disappointing. There wasn't much to them. So I think that will pose a fair few questions about this. And I wouldn't be all that confident of them going through against Olympiacos. I think they should do it, but I wouldn't be massively sure.
Right, before I let you both go, we're going to need predictions on the CL and EL from you both. So, Chris, I'm going to start with you. Champions League winner and Europa League winner, go.
Champions League winner will be Manchester City. I feel like it's just kind of written after the season that they've had. And, yeah. I think it's just narrative. It's the narrative choice, isn't it? And we're all here for the narrative. So, Europa League. Well, I guess I just said that United weren't actually favourites, and I fancied Inter. So I suppose I'm going to have to go with Inter Milan to beat United in the final. But yeah, okay, it could be either of those two, to be honest.
Fair days. Miggs,
I would have gone for City to win the Champions League, except I think that side of the draw will cause everyone on us to be almost fatigued by the end, giving whoever's on the other side a chance. Even the fact that everyone on that side has to play their last 16 games first. So I'm going to go with Atletico Madrid for the Champions League. I'm going to agree with Chris and go for Inter for the Europa League.
All about size of the draw this week. Right, that's all we've got time for this week, I'm afraid. Miguel, Critch, thank you for joining me, and thank you guys for listening as well. If you are a new listener, please subscribe to this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you listen from. And leave us a rating as well, because that will help more people find us. Be sure to follow Indie Sport and Indie Football on various social media platforms to keep up to date with everything that's going on and everything our writers are writing about. But until next week, we'll see you soon and enjoy your feast of European football.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.